KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth, where we'll be speaking with Pearl Stark. She is the host and producer of The Point Puzzle. Have a great night.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
So who do you do the thing to do when it's time to do it, no matter to who? But there's nobody there to do it but you. And what is it that has to be done is a puzzle and a song.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I am speaking with Pearl Stark, the host and producer of The Point Puzzle, a two-minute weekly radio puzzle produced at KPOV Bend. Welcome to the show, Pearl.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming on to talk with us. So for our listeners who aren't yet familiar, what is The Point Puzzle?
It is a two-minute segment where I ask a puzzle every week, and then I give the answer to last week's and announce who the winner was. It's kind of a variety of logic, math, and word puzzles, but don't worry, it's mostly word puzzles.
How did you get started producing The Point Puzzle?
Well, I love radio, especially nonprofit and local community radio, and I also love puzzles, so it was kind of a natural fit. I'm here at KPOV in Bend, and when we started about 11 years ago, we started a daily morning news show, and we were trying to put together a variety of different segments that would air on it. I suggested a puzzle.
And so what is your process like for developing each week's puzzle?
Well, generally, I start by thinking about something that's going on in the news or a timely event or a holiday, and I just kind of look through phrases and words associated with that until something pops out at me. But the other thing that happens occasionally is during the week when I'm kind of going about my normal business, sometimes somebody says something and I think, oh, that would be a great puzzle.
What has the response been like from listeners?
You know, there's some really dedicated listeners who answer every week. And then there's a variety of people who kind of jump in now and again when something strikes them. So I think it's clear that there are puzzle people who love puzzles and will go out of their way to find them and listen to them. And I think I try to make it fun for the rest of the folks as well who aren't quite as dedicated to puzzling.
Do you have a favorite point puzzle that you've crafted over the years?
No, you know, I don't think I do. I personally love the math and logic puzzles, but I know that that's not everybody else's favorite. So I do tend to do more word puzzles than math and logic. And I've had a few that I get really excited about, the word puzzles where I think, oh, like that's perfect. And they come along now and again.
Have you ever made a puzzle that ended up being a lot harder for people than you thought it would be?
Yes, I have. Sometimes I come up with one and I think, oh, I wonder, we'll see how this goes. And I can usually tell, like I said, I have a few dedicated listeners who pretty much solve them every week. And if they don't answer that week, I know it was a hard one.
Have you ever made one that was way too easy?
You know, I don't know if I would know if it was too easy. There's definitely weeks when I get more answers, and my guess is that they're a little bit easier that week, but it could also just be it was more interesting that week. So, but if your listeners want to tell me when something's too easy, I would love to know. So definitely hop in, send me an email. I try to answer all the emails and get back to any listeners who have comments or questions.
Well, yeah, that's part of it, right? We didn't say that up top, but that, you know, people write in with their comments about it and what they think the answer to the puzzle is. Do you have any tips for people going into solving the kind of puzzles that you put on The Point Puzzle?
You know, I think it's the kind of puzzle generally where you can just stew on it for a little while. You think about it, and sometimes if it doesn't work coming at it from the way I pose the question, you can come at it from the answer side and work backwards. So, I think it might be one of those that just pops into your head type situations where it's hard to to really sit down and figure it out step by step. If you really want to, sometimes you can do the reverse of what I did and start looking up lists of words that fall into the category of whatever the theme of the puzzle is, and sometimes that might help.
Well, we know you're a puzzle crafter. Are you also a puzzle consumer?
I absolutely am a puzzle consumer. I've loved puzzles my whole life. I started getting Games Magazine back when I was 13, and let's just say that's a long time ago.
What are some of your favorite puzzles? Are there like regular ones that you keep up with?
Yeah, you know, I generally start every morning doing some kind of quick, easy puzzles, some like the New York Times mini crossword and maybe a Wordle. But I also have a couple of sites that have some of the Japanese logic style puzzles that are kind of good way to wake up the brain. And then when I can't sleep in the middle of the night, I generally am doing a crossword or some other kind of puzzle to help me relax and go back to sleep.
So you make the point puzzle every week. Are there other types of puzzles that you make on your own time?
I do, yeah. You know, I actually have a newspaper puzzle as well that's published in a couple of weekly newspapers. And then it's a word-based Sudoku variety. And then I occasionally write some puzzles for some magazines and newspapers.
This is so cool because I just recently got into writing crosswords myself.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I've written a couple of crosswords. They're definitely a more time-consuming to put together crosswords than other varieties of puzzles, but very rewarding too.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like I have to hit my head against the wall, metaphorically, for a while before I get there.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes creating a puzzle is its own form of puzzle, for sure.
Do you have any special puzzle recommendations besides, you know, the weekly point puzzle?
There are a lot of fun puzzles online. Like I said, I really enjoy logic puzzles and math puzzles as well as word puzzles. So one of the things I do every year is the World Puzzle Championship has a few rounds of puzzles that they provide that are really fun and quite challenging. And then crossword puzzles and magazines of puzzles and, yeah, kind of a little bit of everything.
Well, coming back to the point puzzle, what do you hope that people walk away from the experience of solving? What do you hope they get out of it?
I think it's a different way to kind of exercise your brain and maybe look at communication and words and think a little bit differently. So that's why I enjoy them. But I also love the aspect of the puzzle that it's community engagement, that we're connecting these nonprofit radio stations and community stations across the country and kind of having, especially for me, a little bit of a conversation back and forth with other like-minded people who are interested in the same things. The same way that all of our community stations and programming really can address people's passions and loves that help connect us.
If our listeners want to play and respond to your puzzle, how do they go about doing that?
They can email me at puzzle@kpov.org and send in answers, send in suggestions for new puzzles, send in comments, anything that they have. Emails are the best way. It's also available if you missed it or need to see it in writing. I keep it up on the KPOV website on the point puzzle page there and another site called mathpuzzlesgames.com.
Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up?
I'm really excited to be back on KBOO. You all carried the puzzle a few years back before the pandemic, and I think with a lot of turnover and stress during the pandemic, it didn't fit anymore for a little while. So I'm really excited. I always got a lot of answers from KBOO listeners, and I'm looking forward to having that dialogue again.
Well, thank you so much, Pearl. We're glad to have you back.
Oh, thanks.
That was Pearl Stark, the host and producer of The Point Puzzle, a 2-minute weekly radio puzzle produced at KPOV in Bend. With all that preamble, let's get into this week's puzzle. I'm Althea Billings. Thanks for listening.
It's time for the puzzle.
Last week, I asked you to take two types of farm animals, drop the last letter of one, and put them together to form a timely event. Well, the answer is equine and ox. Drop the E, and you have equinox. Our winner this week is Daryl McKeel, who listens to KYAQ in Newport, Oregon.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. It's all right. Oh, oh, yeah, 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 now. Little darling, it's been
for the new puzzle, take something that might be associated with Easter in two words. Drop three letters, and you are left with a company that might help you in a nor'easter. So again, take something associated with Easter in two words. Drop three letters, and you are left with a company that might help you in a nor'easter. When you have the answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday.
Mr. Rabbit, your ears are mighty long. Yes, don't you know they were put on wrong? Every little soul's gonna shine, shine. Every little soul's gonna shine along.
This has been Pearl Stark with your Point Puzzle for the week of March 25th. The Point Puzzle is produced at KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
You're listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Lisa Loving. Congress is seriously considering expanding the child tax credit. During the pandemic, from July to December of 2021, there was an expanded CTC that provided up to $3,600 per child. Some researchers say the expanded CTC cut child poverty in half and improved the mental health of parents as well. Rita Hamad is an associate professor at Harvard University's School of Public Health. She spoke with KBOO contributor David Rosenberg about what's been done with the child tax credit in the past and what's being proposed now.
Yeah, so Congress looks like is seriously considering expanding the child tax credit again. The proposal that's currently being seriously considered is not as generous as it was in 2021 when they expanded it during the pandemic. At that time, they increased it up to $3,600 per child, and they also distributed it not just as an annual tax refund, but they also distributed half of it as monthly payments in the last 6 months of 2021. What they're proposing to do this time is different in a couple of important ways. They are looking to increase the payment size to some families, specifically those that are sort of in the mostly in the range of $10,000 to $40,000 a year. Unlike the previous expansion, though, they're not going to provide any benefits to people who make zero or very little income. And then they're also not going to distribute it in that monthly way like they did last time. It'll still just be, you know, people get it when they file their taxes in the spring. So the 2021 child tax credit expansion was estimated to lift about 3 million kids out of poverty. This new expansion, they're estimating that it'll probably lift about 400,000 kids out of poverty, which is obviously not nothing. That's fantastic. You know, almost 500,000 children no longer living in poverty. But at the same time, it's leaving out a lot of really vulnerable children whose parents aren't able to work, who have very little other resources, people who don't work usually aren't eligible for a lot of the other safety net programs in our country. So not as generous as it could be.
Why is that? Is that because there was a serious Republican pushback on it, or is there some other reason?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination of reasons. One is, I imagine, the budget is that it would be much more expensive to provide as much of a benefit as was done during the pandemic. I think the pandemic was a very unique situation when a lot of people recognized that there was a lot of problems with the labor market. A lot of people weren't able to work even though they wanted to. And so there was maybe a little bit more push to be more generous. And now people are maybe looking at the budget a little bit more. I think one criticism of that is that, you know, a lot of the estimates of the benefits of these programs don't consider like long-term health benefits for kids who get income support while they're children, whose parents are then able to like provide more resources, provide safer housing, more nutrition. And so a lot of the estimates of benefits don't look out beyond 10 years. And so they're really limited in that way. And then the other reason is that there has been some concern that if you give the poorest families money, or really any families money without really strings attached, that then they'll decide that they don't want to work anymore. And so there's concerns that people then aren't going to, you know, participate in the labor force and sort of help lift themselves up by their bootstraps.
Very difficult to do if you think about it.
Yes. Yes. Especially for people who can't afford shoes, you know. yes. But at the same time, there have been a few studies of the 2021 child tax credit expansion that have tried to examine whether there were, you know, there was a huge decrease in employment when you suddenly give people money. And that's not what studies have found. They've found really little, if any, decline in employment. And I mean, if you think about it, if you give people, you know, what amounts to like $300 a month, that barely covers like being able to, you know, maybe feed your kid a small part of your rent or mortgage payment. And then, you know, what we have found is that people use that money to cover their essential expenses, to pay for childcare, things like that, housing, food. And so I think the concerns about employment, while in theory might be true, they didn't really pan out. And I mean, that's, again, during the pandemic, people had very good reason to want to take that money and stay home instead of work and be exposed to COVID. And that didn't happen. So I think, you know, hopefully as more of these kinds of studies come out that show, you know, the potential health benefits, like our previous research did, or that show that, you know, there wasn't that big of an effect on employment, if any, I think hopefully, you know, more legislators will come around to the, you know, the potential benefits of this policy.
And could you talk about the mental health benefits, particularly for parents?
Yeah, so that was the study that my team did at the Social Policies for Health Equity Research Center. And we used national data. We looked at mental health among parents before and after the child tax credit was expanded.
How do you really measure that, though?
Yeah, so we use data from the census, the Household Pulse Survey, and the Household Pulse Survey includes a couple of measures of mental health. They look at depressive symptoms and anxiety symptoms. So we examine both of those. So it's, you know, they ask literally hundreds of thousands of people across the country every few weeks or every month about their mental health. And so we were able to look at the mental health patterns among parents before and after the major child tax credit expansion in 2021. And we sort of had a control group of people without kids because, you know, maybe mental health was changing for other reasons unrelated to the child tax credit expansion. And we did find that among parents, there was a significant decrease in both anxiety and depressive symptoms, you know, on the order of 10% as a result of these payments. And so it was really, you know, not insubstantial. And we found that the lowest income parents benefited the most. They were the ones who got the largest benefit, and many of them were newly eligible because there was no income cutoff as there had been in the past. And so that, again, really speaks to the potential of this policy to improve mental health for parents. And then that just improves the environments in which children grow up in. And so it could potentially have longer term benefits that our team and others are trying to examine.
So looking to the future, do you see this tax credit continuing in 2025, 2026, et cetera?
The proposal that's on the table now actually has not been passed. The House has passed it, and the Senate still has not decided whether to vote on it. So it's still up in the air as to whether the federal child tax credit will be expanded. What is definitely happening is that a lot of states are deciding that this is something they want to invest in. So a lot of states have their own child tax credits. It's 14 states at this point, and actually 10 of them were just started or expanded in 2023. So this is a very active arena for policymaking.
Not in addition to what the federal government might do, right?
It is in addition, yeah. Okay. So separately from the federal child tax credit, a lot of states have their own sort of income tax filing, not all states, but some of them do. And yeah, 14 of those states provide their own child tax credit on top of the federal child tax credit. And this is really a range of states. So it's like Idaho, Utah, New Mexico, as well as, you know, more left-leaning states like California and Massachusetts. So I think there is a lot of bipartisan agreement, at least at the state level, that this is really an important way to invest in kids. A lot of those state child tax credits are just for working parents, but there's also states like here in Massachusetts or in California where it's more universal. So even people without income can get it, recognizing that those kids also need help, even if their parents aren't working for whatever reason. So yeah, so even if the federal government doesn't end up passing this proposal, there's still a chance that a lot of Americans might start benefiting from this kind of income support for kids.
That was Harvard University Associate Professor Rita Hamad speaking with KABU contributor David Rosenberg about the child tax credit, a policy that researchers say cut child poverty in half. Congress is again considering expanding the program. You're listening to KABU News in Depth. The child tax credit isn't the only method for governments to support families, and especially kids. Flint, Michigan has passed a universal cash program for babies called RX Kids. The program gives all mothers $1,500 while they're pregnant and $500 per month for the first year of their child's life. Scott Santens is the founder and president of the Income to Support All Foundation. He spoke with KABU contributor David Rosenberg.
What's going on in Flint, Michigan? Is this totally unique and new compared to what we've seen before?
Yeah, what's going on in Flint, Michigan is RX Kids, and it's a universal program in the city. So every mom during her pregnancy is able to get a unconditional cash grant during her pregnancy of $1,500, followed by $500 per month.
Regardless of income,
yes, for the baby's first year.
Anything close to that going on in other cities or states?
The closest would be the baby's first year's pilot, which is an ongoing experiment that's in four different cities where a randomized selection of mothers was selected to compare against a control group, where they're looking at the first few years of a baby's life, where some of them get that monthly income and some of them don't. And of course, I'd also say that, somewhat similar to what we saw for 6 months with the enhanced child tax credit, where that went to 9 out of 10 kids. So it did have an income test, but it was for the most part universal. But when it comes to the Flint, Michigan program, this is a fully universal all kids in their first year program.
Yeah, I remember years ago we were hearing about the importance of Head Start when it comes to giving kids an advantage when they're young, but this would go even beyond that. This would kind of set kids up for Head Start or some similar program, would you say?
I would say that it sets them off on the right foot, because again, this is just 1 year, but we also know that making sure that kids have greater access to food and basic need resources, especially during their first year, can be quite transformative. We've seen this too, like in Alaska, which I guess also is a great example too of this full universality. So this is in Alaska since 1982, every child and adult receives this universal dividend of about $1,000 to $2,000 per year. And so there's some really interesting studies that have come out of this, especially when you look at say, these studies where, you know, depending on the distribution of the dividend and the birth of the child, they can either go essentially 1 year without that money, or they get it right at birth. And you can see the differences in like the paths of those children as they grow up, just based on that 1 year difference. And they're pretty impressive, like as far as reduced child obesity and a $1,000 in a child's first year means 10% less of 10% less child abuse in regards to reports to Child Protective Services. So you see that there is this like really positive impact. I've seen multiple papers that try to cost out like the cost of child poverty and also the kind of return on investment of reducing it. And, you know, the estimate is that child poverty costs us over $1 trillion per year, and that that the ROI from actually reducing it, for every dollar spent, we can see an ROI of $10 by one report that I've seen recently. A more recent report said you could even see an ROI of $62 per $1, which is just looking at the child's first like 5 years. So we know, like, basically the younger you're able to get those resources to the kids, like the higher the return on investment, as far as like less crime, less ending up in prison, and better educational outcomes. They go to school like longer, better grades. It's just, you know, huge investment.
Would you like to see universal cash payments for everyone, for the whole population? I remember even in presidential campaigns, I think Nixon, when he ran against McGovern, I think both of them were talking about that in their own way. It's not a new idea.
Yeah. Nixon's family assistance plan, it wouldn't have been universal. It would have been phased out, but still that would have been to, you know, every family. And also it's interesting with Nixon's plan, where it provided to each member of a family. So it wasn't just the child, it was also the mother and father as well. And yeah, some interesting details there. Another, like in Canada, they've got their Canadian child benefit. And of course, other countries have fully universal child allowances. I think that that's something like the End Child Poverty Act of Rashida Tlaib's. It's also, that would be a universal child allowance if that happened to be passed in the U.S. But I think in general, in universality, makes all the sense. It's just by trying to target it, you just leave out too many people.
And it just makes it easier if you give it to everyone rather than making people jump through hoops.
Right, exactly.
Flint, Michigan in particular has had this problem with their water supply, and this universal cash payment, does that somehow affect that? Does that make things easier for people, even though they're drinking or having to deal with this horrible water situation?
I've read that the water situation has been resolved for years, and now it's more of a trust situation where, you know, the tests of the water show that this is already cleaner than, you know, most other cities in the country, thanks to all this like brand new infrastructure and everything. So I think it's more about potentially solving that trust issue. If every child, and therefore every parent of a child, feels that the local government actually like cares about them and the health of their child, then maybe they'd be more willing to trust. And I think that, you know, in general, I think we're looking at a crisis of trust across the country.
In the current political climate, do you see this kind of program being passed in cities and states across the country, or in Congress for that matter?
Well, it's interesting how the way they're doing this is they're getting some of the funding from TANF. Because TANF is a block grant that provides flexibility in how states use it. It hasn't really been used in this way before. So I think that each state could potentially utilize that mechanism if they thought that that's something that they would like to do. And then maybe if enough places did this, then it would make sense to even look at a national program, either, you know, the End Child Poverty Act as proposed by Rashida Tlaib and others, or even something like, you know, Mitt Romney also suggested his own child allowance program that would, I believe, have replaced TANF as part of its, you know, funding mechanism. So there's certainly potential there as a pathway to get towards a child allowance in the U.S.
And anything else you want to add to what you've said?
I just add that I wish that overall we would really look at this as an investment And then I pointed out those various returns.
Rather than a handout. Or,
right, exactly. Like, this is something that the fact that we're not doing it is basically like, you know, burning piles of money. And we looked at like the debate in Congress that we had around the extension of the enhanced child tax credit. This was looking at $100 billion per year extra. By doing that program, we cut child poverty by about half. And then by letting it lapse, then child poverty more than doubled immediately. And yet we're spending over $1 trillion per year on child poverty. So like, how is it that $100 billion per year is too much, but $1 trillion per year is like a good deal? I don't think that makes sense. And I hope that we start to see it as this investment that we should do just based on the returns, instead of thinking about this as like an expensive cost.
That was Scott Santons of the Income to Support All Foundation speaking with KBOO contributor David Rosenberg about a remarkable program out of Flint, Michigan called RX Kids. It gives expectant mothers $1,500 while they're pregnant and $500 a month for the first year of their child's life. You've been listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Lisa Loving. Thanks for listening.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Journey through lush songs and soundscapes teeming with life during the Garden of the Heart. Each episode explores the ways that music carries our emotions.